Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank.
To be honest, I'm coming to you from the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, and I'm really accustomed to an altogether different kind of reception when I walk in the room. But I'm happy to make the adjustment. When I walk in there, if looks could kill, I'd be dead 1,000 times. Yeah, that's how it is. We're living through very difficult times. This is probably the darkest hour. This is the darkest hour for Jews since the Holocaust. I don't have to explain it to this audience, but we're living in a time when Jews are afraid to openly identify as Jews. People, when they take a taxi, they're going to the Jewish center in some places here in Europe, also in America, are afraid to give the address of the Jewish institution they're going to, a synagogue or something. They'll give the address of something nearby so the driver won't identify them as Jewish. People are afraid to put on a mezuzah. There have been attempted terrorist attacks in France and Germany and many other countries. In my own city, I grew up in Montreal, Canada. The synagogue that I went to as a child, every Shabbat, had a bullet found in the door of the synagogue. The Jewish school, the yeshiva where my brothers attended, someone went in the middle of the night and shot at the school. Thank God no one was killed, even though there are people, there's a dormitory, so there are students who live in the yeshiva. They shot at this yeshiva, and then a week later, again, someone, probably the same person, shot again. And there were dozens of other incidents in Canada. And, you know, when I moved to Europe 20 years ago to Geneva to become director of UN Watch, and in Europe, I had security. When you go to the synagogue, there's serious security. But in Canada, we never had anything. And maybe on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, you had a few security guards. But during the year, nothing. And it was considered perhaps one of the safest places in the world for Jews. In the past year, attacks in Montreal against synagogues, Jewish community centers, Molotov cocktails in Toronto, in Vancouver, all across the country. And as you had in many cities, supporters of Hamas taking over university campuses and making extremely aggressive protests, specifically in front of Jewish institutions. Really a very dangerous time. So, you know, in this kind of a time, you would think you could be able to look to the world body that is supposed to uphold human rights and to fight racism. That's the United Nations, where I'll be going tomorrow and speaking on Friday in one of their debates. You know, it's relevant to speak of the United Nations because just 75 years ago, we just marked the 75th anniversary of the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a great document. It was adopted by the United Nations in Paris in the Palais de Chaillot on December 10th, 1948, in a special session of the General Assembly. It was written in part by René Cassin, the great French legal philosopher who happened to be Jewish. He said he looked into the Ten Commandments, and that inspired him to write the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which speaks of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to equality, human dignity, and so forth. So in that declaration, adopted in 1948, just 3 years after the Holocaust, in the preamble, it says, this declaration is being adopted in response to barbarous acts which shocked the conscience of mankind. Barbarous act which shocked the conscience of mankind. Speaking, of course, about the Holocaust. So that's 1948. And in our time, on October 7th, Hamas sent a terrorist army of thousands, along with thousands more of civilians from Gaza, who invaded Israel, broke into dozens of residential communities with the intention, and indeed the consequence, of slaughtering Jews, committing the most horrific, sadistic acts against families, murdering hundreds of youths at a music festival. President Biden, right after the massacre of October 7th, he said, sometimes in this world, there are moments when pure, unadulterated evil is released upon the world. And he said, that is what we just saw. And in the face of such barbarous acts, like in 1948, so too today, we can expect the United Nations to take the lead in responding to such acts. And yet, to be honest, what we've seen since October 7th, for the most part, has been the complete opposite. Starting from the top, the Secretary General Guterres in New York, shortly after the massacre, he spoke and he said, I condemn what Hamas did. He condemned the attacks. However, he said, he added, we must recognize that nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing happens in a vacuum. He went on to enumerate numerous so-called grievances of the Palestinians against Israel, of all the supposed crimes that Israel committed against the Palestinians over decades, one after the other after the other. In effect, Secretary General Guterres was justifying what Hamas did. A few days later, when he was criticized, he said, no, I didn't justify, I condemned. Yes, he condemned, but then right afterwards, he did justify. And that message from the Secretary General was sent down throughout the whole United Nations. And many other officials have said similar things. You know, in Geneva, near my office, there's the World Health Organization, the WHO. Dr. Tedros is the director. He has issued numerous statements condemning Israel for what it does in hospitals without mentioning that Hamas systematically, deliberately places terrorist infrastructure in hospitals. Hamas put hostages in hospitals. You were able to see it in closed circuit TV in Al-Shifa Hospital, how hostages were brought in there to be hidden in there. For them, the hospital was a place to hide Israeli hostages. You know, under the Geneva Conventions, to use a hospital to hide terrorist infrastructure is a war crime in the Geneva Conventions. And yet, Dr. Tedros doesn't say a word about what Hamas does regularly, how they subvert hospitals for terrorist purposes. On the contrary, he only speaks out when Israel is forced to go in and remove the terrorists from the hospital. Then he speaks out, and then he condemns Israel alone, routinely. If you go to New York, you know, now they're opening the General Assembly next week, in 2 weeks rather, 2 weeks from yesterday, will be the grand opening high-level segment. President Biden will open the annual General Assembly, and the other heads of state will gather. And after the heads of state leave town, they will begin their business of adopting resolutions. That's their legislation. They adopt resolutions. And to give you an example of what happens at the General Assembly, this is typical at the General Assembly. Last year, there was one resolution that criticized Iran, the Islamic regime of Iran. There was one resolution that criticized the regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And there was one resolution that criticized North Korea, one of the most horrific places on the planet, full of prison camps for anyone who somehow had a bad thought about the regime, a wrong thought. One on Iran, one on Syria, one on North Korea, and one or two or three other countries get a resolution. Maybe Russia got two recently with the war in Ukraine, maybe. On Israel, 15 resolutions. One on Iran, one on Syria, one on North Korea, 15 against Israel. In those resolutions, all kinds of criticism and condemnation, not one mention of the word Hamas does not appear. Hamas, as the name Hamas has never once been condemned. Sometimes in one resolution, there's an indirect reference to armed groups, but they can't even bring themselves to say the word Hamas. Israel is condemned 15 times more than Bashar al-Assad. So this is, you know, the UN speaks of proportionality. Israel's not being proportionate. And yet we see what proportionality means at the United Nations. Whatever you may think of Israel, and some people do think Israel is a criminal state, but 15 times more resolutions than North Korea, Syria, or Iran, that's regular at the United Nations. And at the same time, there are the vast majority of countries, more than 180 countries have zero. There's never been one resolution of the General Assembly condemning China, the communist regime of Beijing, which oppresses 1.5 billion people. That's one-fifth of humanity. One-fifth of humanity is living under a totalitarian regime where you have no freedom of assembly. You know, our organization, UN Watch, I'm speaking tonight about our battle against anti-Israel bias, but you know, we're active as well in fighting dictatorships and supporting human rights heroes. Just last year, we brought a young woman named Ray Cha. She stood up in Shanghai and she did this. Empty piece of paper. That was her protest. She just stood up in a Shanghai street with a white piece of paper. Right away, they took her away right away, threw her in prison. So that's China, right? Zero freedom of assembly in China. Freedom of speech, zero freedom of speech. You say anything remotely critical of the regime, you are in prison. One of our partners is Yang Jianli, a Chinese former political prisoner. He dared to speak out for workers whose rights were violated. They threw him in prison, put him in solitary confinement for years. So zero resolutions on China. On Cuba, a police state that has 1,000 young people in prison because they protested 2-3 years ago for democracy, zero resolutions. Zimbabwe, a dictatorship that throws human rights lawyers in prison, zero. And the list goes on and on and on. Israel, 15 times more, and indeed more than the whole world combined. So that's the General Assembly. Then come back to Geneva at the UN Human Rights Council, where I'll be on Friday speaking in a debate with a UN expert whose name is Alina Duhan. She's a professor in Belarus. She thinks that Iran is a victim. She says if there's problems in Iran, it's because the West put sanctions on Iran. That's why there's problems. The whole problem is because of the sanctions. She flew to Iran. She put on a hijab. This is the UN human rights expert. Called a press conference. The Ayatollah Khomeini is in the picture behind her. And all these microphones of Iranian and Russian media. And she says, the West is responsible for all the problems in Iran. She went to Venezuela, the dictator Maduro, who refuses to recognize that elections were held and he was defeated. The whole world, the whole civilized world recognizes he was defeated. He's throwing people in jail. Maduro welcomed this UN expert. And she said, Mr. Maduro, Mr. President, you are a victim. All the problems in Venezuela, 7 million people have fled Venezuela in the past decade because the dictator Nicolas Maduro destroyed the country. One of the wealthiest countries, more oil reserves than maybe anywhere on the planet. Maybe it's a tie with Saudi Arabia, maybe even more. And he destroyed the country. And the UN expert came to visit and said, you are the victim of Western sanctions, America, they put sanctions on you. That's why there's trouble in Venezuela. She did this in Zimbabwe and she did this in other countries. So that's where I'll be speaking on Friday to give you a sense. Who are the members of the Human Rights Council? It's a body of governments. There are 47 governments that sit on the highest UN human rights body, 47 governments. It changes. You get a 3-year term. You can be reelected once. You have to go off for a year. You can come back. Who are the members of the UN Human Rights Council? Most people here in Europe. I'm sure in your media and most people that you know in universities, when you read the headline, the United Nations Human Rights Council said, it's like, and the Lord spoke to Moses at Sinai. Oh my gosh, the UN human rights experts, they must be people with long white beards, with white robes, strolling along Mount Olympus, making their decisions based on facts, logic, morality, when nothing could be further from the truth, when sitting around the table are not Socrates, Aristotle, or Plato, but sitting around the Human Rights Council today, 60% are dictatorships. The Chinese communist regime is sitting there as a judge on the Human Rights Council. The dictatorship of Cuba is sitting there on the Human Rights Council. Both these countries have been there forever. They never leave. They get elected. They get elected. Eritrea, a horrific country. If you want to know why Eritreans will walk thousands of miles across the Sinai and get tortured in order to get a job in Tel Aviv, it's because it's a horrific regime. Algeria, a horrible regime. Qatar, which sponsors the Taliban and Hamas, is a member of the Human Rights Council. And you'll be very delighted to hear that next month they're running for re-election. And if you want to make a bet, Qatar, with the billions of dollars that they have to buy sports teams in France and anything else they want to in the world, you can be sure they will be reelected. These are the members of the UN Human Rights Council. And don't be surprised that there's never been a single condemnation, a single criticism, a single mention in any resolution of China, Cuba, Qatar, Algeria, Eritrea, and so forth. So this is the UN Human Rights Council, which turns a blind eye to the world's worst dictatorships. While they are ignoring the dictatorships, instead, they focus a huge amount of their time singling out the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel. Israel's not perfect. There are criticisms that we can make of Israel. It's imperfect. You can criticize the treatment of the Arab minority, but it's not an apartheid state. You know, in South Africa, when there was apartheid against blacks, and I was there and I saw the prisons where Nelson Mandela was held, a black person cannot be elected to the parliament. A black person cannot be on the Supreme Court. Black people weren't lawyers and doctors and judges. In Israel, it's not perfect. There's criticisms and it needs to get better. But Arabs are lawyers and doctors. I served on the Supreme Court in Israel as a law clerk. The Supreme Court justice, one of his law clerks was an Arab. One of the Supreme Court judges is an Arab who, as was mentioned in the conference we had in the parliament today here, Salim Jubran, the Arab judge on the Supreme Court, actually put an Israeli prime minister, Olmert, in prison, right? Can you imagine that in some of these other countries? Can you imagine a Jewish judge in an Arab country is going to put an Arab ruler in prison, or that in apartheid South Africa, a black judge would have put, you know, one of the apartheid rulers? You know, it's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's a smear. It's a smear designed to demonize Israel. You know, once upon a time, if you wanted to demonize the Jews, you say the Jews killed God, they killed Jesus, and then they would have pogroms on that basis. And today, when society here in Europe, the virtue of society, the religion today is human rights for most people, then you say Israel is the enemy of human rights. If our values today are anti-racism, Israel is the only racist state. So this is at the UN Human Rights Council where we're meeting now. We just opened the session. We'll meet for a month. And every session follows 10 agenda items. Agenda item 2, which was today, report to the High Commissioner. Tomorrow, agenda item 3, civil and political rights. Next week, agenda item 4, human rights situations around the world. That's where if you want to, if your country or your NGO, my group UN Watch is one of the non-governmental organizations, we have the right as an observer to speak in sessions. If you've ever seen me speaking at the United Nations, it's at the Human Rights Council, where when they're not silencing me, officially we have the right to speak. And if a country wants to speak out about North Korea or Iran or Syria or Russia, they can do so under Agenda Item 4. That's where you can speak out about 193 countries, the world, Agenda Item 4. A few days later, there will be Agenda Item 7. The title is Human Rights Violations in the Occupied Arab Territories, including Palestine, namely Israel. So one agenda item on the whole world for one day, 193 countries, and then one agenda item one day on Israel alone. No other country in the world, not North Korea, not China, not Russia, which is bombarding, as we speak, innocent families in Ukraine. No country in the world is targeted with a special day and a special agenda item, only Israel. So that is, in every meeting of the UN Human Rights Council, built-in discrimination. That's 3 times a year, September, March, and June. Now, in the Human Rights Council, they have a high commissioner. He's actually Austrian, Volker Türk. And, you know, last year, there was an event on anti-Semitism organized by the US government in Geneva. And he came and he said, you know, as an Austrian, I know about the anti-Israel attacks that happened during the war. I grew up, he said, 20 years after the war, but it's very personal to me. Anti-Semitism is very personal to me as an Austrian. But I'm afraid to tell you that he presides over the bureaucracy. He's the head of the bureaucracy, the UN Human Rights Office, which is one of the most anti-Israel institutions in the world. Last week, one of his experts, I'll mention her in a moment, Francesca Albanese, issued a statement saying that where she says, she doesn't say the word Israel, she says apartheid Israel, as if the name of Israel is apartheid Israel. No one would ever do that about another country. In other words, no one would ever say China, which put a million Muslim Uyghurs in camps, cut off their beards, forced them to give up their religion, their Muslim religion. No one would ever say, and it's been accused of genocide by the Canadian government and I think the State Department, other countries. No UN expert would say genocidal China. And if they would, the bureaucracy would never print it. They would be, diplomatically, China is called the government of China. You can't. But they had no problem writing apartheid Israel in a tweet. This is the office of Volker Turk, agreed to do that, apartheid Israel. And of course, it's used when Jewish students in campuses around the world are targeted and demonized. They say, you're supporting apartheid. You're supporting evil. Therefore, you're evil. You support war crimes. You support genocide. So this is what's happening. Volker Turk last week, when six hostages held by Hamas were murdered in cold blood, including Hirsch Goldberg Polan, Israeli-American, a Jew from Jerusalem. Volker Turk's office put out a statement saying they condemn these murders, these killings by armed groups, Can't even mention the word Hamas because they work in Gaza. They know if you say, Omerta, the mafia, if you say anything, you're finished. There's a code of silence. So the UN basically doesn't want to say a word against Hamas. I'll mention it in a moment about UNRWA. They too cannot, they can't even say the word Hamas. They're incapable. Now let me share with you a word or two about Albanese, and then a word or two about UNRWA, and I'll wrap up. And I don't know, did we plan to take questions? I don't remember if we wanted to have time. Were we planning to take questions? I don't remember. Yeah, okay, good. So we'll try to not to go too long. At the UN Human Rights Council, they appoint investigators. Some investigators investigate a theme, a subject, like torture, like freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and some investigate countries. There's about 12 to 15 who investigate countries, and there's one expert investigating Israel. The title is Special Rapporteur, it means an investigator, of human rights, Special Rapporteur of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories. In theory, the mandate sounds legitimate. I'm going to investigate human rights in the Palestinian territories. Okay, someone's going to promote human rights. You might say, wait a minute, in the whole world, there's only 12 countries that are being investigated. Should the territories really be one of them? Okay, we can debate that. But if someone's going to investigate and report on human rights, bevakasha, that's a nice thing. But actually, if you read the mandate, the title says investigating human rights in the territories. If you read the actual instruction from February 1993, unchanged in 31 years, it says, we're appointing a rapporteur to investigate Israel's violations of the bases and principles of international law. Israel's violations, not Hamas, not the jihad, not Fatah. And so the rapporteur says, if there's a terrorist attack by the Palestinians against Israel in a pizza shop and a disco, why didn't you say anything? It's not my mandate. My mandate is to investigate Israel's violations. If Israel goes to investigate the terrorists to arrest them, then I will condemn Israel. That's my mandate. Okay, so that is the mandate itself is biased. It is prejudicial. It presumes guilt in advance. It doesn't even say investigate Israel's actions, right? Maybe it's a violation. Maybe it's not. To investigate Israel's violations doesn't exist anywhere else, this kind of language in a mandate. The guilt is presumed in advance. That's the definition of the word prejudice. Who did they appoint to this job? 2 years ago, I read the nominations and I saw they were going to appoint Francesca Albanese. She is a lawyer, not actually a lawyer, I shouldn't say that because she never passed a bar exam as far as we know, but she is a jurist. She went to law school. She has a law degree, apparently. And she worked for UNRWA for a couple of years. We'll say a moment who they are. So UNRWA is the UN agency for Palestinians. It's supposed to help Palestinians who left, fled, expelled, whatever, from the war of 1948, who were in, who then went to the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, to Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. UNRWA is the agency that takes care of them, gives them education and schools and health clinics. It's kind of like a welfare state. And And Francesca Albanese worked for them for 2 years. And she was nominated to be the UN expert on Palestine. And I went to the council. I said, you know, I did some research into Francesca Albanese, and you are obliged to appoint an objective expert who is professional. And yet, Francesca Albanese, she is the least objective person on the planet. I dare someone to read what she has written and find someone who's less objective than she is. She, for years, has been saying Israel is planning a genocide. Not, she didn't wait for the Gaza war. For years, she's been saying this. She said that the Palestinians, their condition, not now, I'm talking about years ago, from years ago, this is like the Holocaust, right? She said the Nakba, which is what Palestinians allegedly suffered, right? The Arabs of Palestine declared war on Israel. They wanted to destroy the Jewish state. Their leader was the Mufti. The Mufti was allied with Hitler. During the war, he went to Berlin and met with Hitler. Hitler brought him to Bosnia to encourage the Muslim troops to plan to help with the Holocaust if they were to conquer Palestine and kill the Jews there. This was their leader, was the Mufti, and they wanted to destroy the Jews. And Francesca Albanese says that what Palestinians suffered because they lost the war. They launched a war with the neighboring Arab states. They lost the war. They managed to kill 1% of the Jewish population. 6,000 Jews were killed in 1948. But they lost the war. And for her, that's the Nakba. By the way, the Nakba means the catastrophe. This was a word that Arabs used to describe the failure of the Arab states to defeat Israel initially. And then over time, it changed to the catastrophe that the Palestinian Arabs suffered. But initially, it meant something else. It meant the failure of the armies to destroy Israel, which was their stated goal. They declared jihad. They said, we want to throw the Jews into the sea. They were not. Today, they sometimes hide it. They were not hiding it then. So she says the Nakba, what happened to the Palestinians, is like the Warsaw Ghetto, like the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto. It's the same thing. So the notion that Israelis are Nazis, right, that Israelis are evil, if you say if you're Nazi, you're evil, is a consistent theme in her writings, her Facebook posts. In 2014, 10 years ago, she wrote on Facebook, she said, everyone, please give money to UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinians, because they're suffering, Israel is killing them. And you know, she said, America is subjugated by the Jewish lobby. America is subjugated by the Jewish lobby, right? This is the classical anti-Semitism, not the new anti-Semitism, which is to say that Israel is a Nazi state. That's the classical, that the Jews have a plot. There's a cabal of Jews that are controlling the media and the government. This is what Hitler would say, and this was the protocols of the Elders of Zion. The conventional, historical, classical anti-Semitism. She wrote this on Facebook in an open letter to her bishop in Italy, saying, please help give money. You know, the Jews, America is subjugated by the Jewish lobby. She seemed to think that her bishop would like that, which raises questions about what her background was, where were her parents and grandparents' parents when the fascists were ruling Italy and sending Jews to the camps. Interesting question. So, this is what she wrote, many other examples like that. I gave it to the Human Rights Council. They said, thank you very much. And they appointed her. That was the one they wanted. The Palestinian Authority, the PLO, Mahmoud Abbas, who himself is a Holocaust denier, has been condemned by European countries for justifying the Holocaust just a couple of years ago, put aside his doctoral thesis, which was Holocaust denial. A year or two ago, he said more than once that the Holocaust, well, you know, the Jews brought it upon themselves by their actions, by what they did to others. So his ambassador in Geneva is the one who nominated Albanese, and the other countries didn't say a thing. The chairman on April 1st, 2022 says, here's the list with her name on it. Anyone agree? Disagree? Anyone disagree? No? Done. All the countries, all the democracies who are in the room didn't say a thing. So she was appointed. What did she do since then? Albanese was appointed in May 2022. A few months later, in November 2022, she went to a Hamas conference organized by Hamas. And she was there on video. And she said, you have the right to resist. You have the right to resist. Now, whenever you say the right, it sounds like it's a right. Right is holy. The right to something. When you tell Hamas you have the right to resist, for them, resistance is what they call shooting Hirsch Goldberg Polin in the head while he's a prisoner in a cave. That is resistance for them. The resistance for them is Hamas, Hezbollah, the murderers, the rapists, the torturers. They are the resistance. And she says, you have the right to resist in the name of the UN. She's saying that as a UN human rights expert. She, in the past, since the war began, when the war broke out, she has a modus operandi. Here's how it works. If there's an accusation against Israel, not verified, we don't know who made it, seems like it was Hamas. For example, on October 17th, if I have the date right, we read headlines around the world that Israel bombs hospital, kills 500 people. Israel bombs hospital, kills 500 people. Horrible. What could be more horrible? Israel bombs a hospital. Horrible. Turns out nothing was true. Nothing was true. This was a headline that went around the world. Every newspaper in the world, including the New York Times, had it on their homepage. And it turns out it was a lie put out by Hamas. First of all, there was a rocket. It wasn't Israel. It was the jihad. Islamic Jihad was firing rockets at Israel. And as many of the rockets do, 10%, 15%, 20%, they fall short. They kill Palestinians. And this was a rocket by Islamic Jihad, not Israel. Secondly, it didn't hit the hospital. It hit the parking lot. How many people were killed? Maybe 10, maybe more. Not much more. We don't really know. But nothing in the story was true. And this went around the world. The UN expert, she's not a journalist. A journalist wants the story to go out right away. The New York Times, you'd expect them also to verify, one of the leading newspapers used to be of the world. But we'll put that aside. For UN expert, you expect them to verify and check. And normally they're slow. Right away, whatever accusation, she's putting it out. She's putting it out. Anything that has dirt to smear Israel, she's putting it out all the time. So anything she sees, whoosh, goes out to the world. She has hundreds of thousands of followers. Israel's committing genocide every single day. When there's something, when Israel's attacked, then she says, whoa, wait, wait. October 7th, 1,000 people are killed, horrible atrocities. Wait, she says, wait, it's not verified. You have to wait, give it time. Do you know? Maybe we don't know what happened when they killed the hostages, just Hamas executed hostages in cold blood. Said, we don't know what happened. Were they executed or killed? Meaning maybe, you know, the conspiracy theorists say maybe Israel killed them somehow, maybe by a bomb. We don't know. Whenever there's something against Hamas, we don't know. We need to verify. Let's wait. So that's Francesca Albanese. She said a few months ago, she said that Israel killed 180,000 Palestinians. Where did she get that? Someone wrote an article in a medical journal, one-page article, saying that Israel is damaging clinics, and so the health is damaged. And in the future, it could be that 180,000 people who could have lived will not live. A very biased, speculative article. Her tweet to the world, Israel kills 180,000 Palestinians. So the worst misinformation, knowing that this demonizes Israel and Jews around the world. And that's why Jews are being attacked, because you are supporting genocide. And she is the one, more than anyone else in the world, who is spreading this lie and the Hamas misinformation. A few weeks ago, a former UN official, he was the number one UN human rights official in New York, named Craig Mochaber, extremely anti-Israel. He just retired. He put out a tweet where he has a picture of Hitler, Adolf Hitler, walking and shaking hands with some people, I think in a legislature somewhere. And he has a picture of Netanyahu, also put in black and white to make it look just like the Hitler picture, shaking hands in the Congress. And he says, ah, the same. Hitler shaking hands with people in, I guess, the German parliament, the Reichstag, and Netanyahu. Hitler and Netanyahu, the same. And she writes, ah, on Twitter, I had the same thought today. So she endorses this. Okay, so this is regular anti-Semitism. And I was pleased to see today that the first expert, we had a conference on anti-Semitism by your wonderful president of your parliament. Let me commend him, Mr. Wolfgang Sobotnik. Am I pronouncing that right? Yeah. Sobotka, who is an amazing person who brought parliamentarians from around the world for a conference, a terrific conference. And the first speaker, an academic from Germany, Monique Schwartz-Friesel, mentioned Francesca Albanese. She said the anti-Semites like to say the Jews, they brought the Holocaust upon them in the same way that she wrote a few months ago, October 7th, said, no, it's not, she told Macron, the president of France, it's not an anti-Semitic attack. No, McCall, you're wrong. It's not an anti-Semitic, the worst anti-Semitic massacre. Rather, it's a response to Israel's oppression. Again, Israel brought we had one day of the Holocaust on October. Israel brought it upon itself. This is Francesca Albanese. What are we doing about it? I'll share a few words. It's very hard to remove her. Countries don't like to criticize a UN expert, which is wrong. Three countries have condemned her. The United States has condemned her. Said that recently in New York, the ambassador said she's not fit to serve in this or any other job. That's an important statement. The French government, when she criticized Macron, French government said what she did is disgraceful and scandalous, denying anti-Semitism. Germany spoke out, said what she said was appalling. So France, Germany, and the US have condemned her. I'm waiting for other countries. I hope that Austria will condemn her anti-Semitism. And I hope other countries, enlightened countries, will do the same. Because otherwise, she gets all the UN experts to sign statements. These statements get quoted in The Hague, in the International Court of Justice, the ICC, UN experts. Do they know who Francesca Albanese is? They're not interested. UN experts said, and the Lord said to Moses at Sinai, that's how they treat it. So our organization, UN Watch, a small organization based in Geneva, we're trying to uphold the true principles of the UN. The true principles, I mentioned the Universal Declaration, are noble principles. It's the dictators and the terrorists and their friends and apologists, like Albanese, who is the agent of Hamas. She's not paid. She's doing this because she believes in it. They are subverting the true principles of the UN. So we believe we should be holding her to account. And so we ask questions and we scrutinize. And we saw there were some interesting things that happened. One is she went to Australia in November. Now, she's the UN expert on Palestine. The UN gives her a small budget to, in theory, to visit Palestinian territories. Every expert, if you're the expert on North Korea, you could visit there. North Korea doesn't accept them. So you go nearby, you go to South Korea, you interview defectors, and the UN pays for that. Fine. She's the UN expert on Palestine. If she were to go, as her predecessors would go to Jordan, and interview Palestinians there, what's happening in the territory, fine. She went to Australia. Australia is far. There's nothing you can do there about investigating Israel's violations in the occupied Palestinian territory. Australia is beautiful. I went there twice. I'd love to go there again. If the UN would buy me a business class round trip to Australia for 2 weeks and New Zealand, it'd be lovely. So that's what she got in November. And it's not clear if the UN paid for it or the groups that organized her visit, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas groups in Melbourne and Sydney and Canberra and in New Zealand. She went on this trip and we asked questions. How much did your trip cost? It seemed like it costed $20,000 to fly from Tunisia business class to Australia. It's not cheap. She brought her assistant with her, Sarah Troyan, who works with her out of Erasmus University in Rotterdam. She came with her. Who paid for that? She didn't answer the questions, and she was lobbying for boycotting Israel. She went to New Zealand. She told the top New Zealand pension fund, you must divest from Israel. So we asked simple questions. Who paid for the trip? And want to see the receipts. They wouldn't answer us. For months, they wouldn't answer us. Then something interesting happened. Kind of a bizarre story, but I'm here to share with you some stories. Social media is a strange place. And in one of the strange characters in social media is Rabbi Linda Goldstein. Some of you, if you're a geek on Twitter, you may know Rabbi Linda Goldstein. Also, this person is on Instagram. It's a parody account. It's not a real person. It's a pretend character on social media. Rabbi Linda Goldstein holds herself out as the chief rabbi of Gaza. Now, someone who knows will know that there hasn't been Jews in Gaza since about 2005. Sadly, there are some hostages there and some soldiers, but Jews have not lived in Gaza since 2005. And there is no chief rabbi of Gaza. But many people are ignorant. And on the internet, Chief Rabbi Linda Goldstein, she's kind of super progressive, left-wing. You know, in America, maybe you have them here too. We have them too in Europe. Jewish Voices for Peace, some of the most anti-Israel groups on the planet who are used by the anti-Semites. Say, I'm not anti-Semitic. I have a Jew. I have Naturei Karta. I know you have some of them in Vienna, I think. They bring them, the biggest Israel haters bring extreme groups to be their cover, right? I don't hate Jews. I have an Ituri Karta with me with a long beard and peyot, and I have a Jewish Voices for Peace on the left. A Jew hates Israel, so I'm with them. So Chief Rabbi Linda Goldstein is kind of a Jewish Voices for Peace type, extremely anti-Zionist. And it's, if you read it, it's sort of, it's a parody account. It's a parody making fun of these sort of self-hating radical left-wing Jews. And Chief Rabbi Linda Goldstein sent an email to Francesca Albanese's office, said, "We love what you do. You're amazing. And we want to invite you to lecture. Please give a lecture. We have an intifada at Columbia. It's really great. And we need you to give a lecture." And her office writes back, "Thank you so much for this invitation. It's wonderful. What would, tell us more." And Chief Rabbi Linda Goldstein said, "You know, we give some money for the lecture. It's what we call an honorarium." And her office writes back, "Tell us more about the honorarium. We want to know more about this. And we'll send you an invoice. We'll send you an invoice and we'll tell you how to make the payment." And then Rabbi Linda Goldstein, who is a different person, published this information, made it public. And it was a real correspondence. And I said, "This is interesting because a UN expert's not allowed to take money. This is their, it's a job. They're not allowed to take money for a lecture. It's not allowed." So we sent a complaint to the UN. We said, "We want the receipts for her trip to Australia. We want to know, did the pro-Hamas groups pay for it? How much did the flights cost? How much did the hotels cost?" Very simple question. Any member of parliament has to disclose every receipt, every receipt. When I invite a member of Congress to a dinner in Geneva, they ask me later, "Who came to the dinner?" We have to write it down in our reports. Who came to the dinner? Everything has to be transparent and disclosed. The UN, the complete opposite. No transparency. They haven't given a single receipt. But we complained. We made a complaint. And then I got an email from the UN Office of Investigations, OIOS. They do oversight. "Dear Mr. Neuer, we've opened a case number into this complaint and we've transferred it to the UN High Commissioner." Okay, it's Volker Turk, so don't know what's going to happen with that. But we've opened an investigation, and suddenly there's a headline, "UN opens investigation into Francesca Albanese." Now, I don't know what will happen with the investigation, but she should be fired and removed because she is one of the worst anti-Semites in the world. But sometimes, you know, criminals, sometimes they fall for something else. Al Capone in the 1920s and 30s was murdering people in Chicago, and they couldn't get him for murder, but they got him for taxes. And okay, put him behind bars. So if we can put Francesca Albanese behind bars for the fact that she's corrupt, what she does in Australia, or for the fact that she's issuing invoices from her research assistant, Sarah Tryan in the Netherlands, and we have legal action happening there, we'll take it. And I'll just say that in the next week or two, I hope that we will announce a major publication of a report documenting all of Albanese's violations. We will be issuing letters to every single university that has invited her to speak, including Princeton, next few months, Princeton, Brown. Harvard sent her a research assistant. 8 other universities sent her a free research assistant. Someone who's been condemned by racism, the first UN expert in history to be condemned for anti-Semitism by France, Germany, the US, should not be getting a research assistant from an enlightened university. So we will be holding her to account. Finally, I will mention UNRWA, and with this I will conclude. So I mentioned before, UNRWA is the UN agency for Palestinians. They have a slogan, you know, they say that their slogan is "Peace starts here. Peace starts here." How wonderful. How wonderful. And under this slogan, our countries are giving them millions of dollars. And I recently, well, today at the parliament, I read out the list. So it's the first time I'm going to look at my notes so I can be precise about the dates, the figures. So last year, UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinians, received, under the slogan "Peace Starts Here," they tell donor states that they're going to educate Palestinians for human rights and peace, and they promote stability. They received $400 million from the US, $212 million from Germany, $120 million from the EU, $62 million from France, $49 million from Sweden, $45 million from Norway, $40 million from the Netherlands, $36 million from Canada, $37 million from the UK, Austria, $5 million, and other countries of varying amounts. Now, despite what they claim, peace starts here. The truth is the opposite. The truth, if you just look at who the teachers are, right? Some people look at the textbooks. That's important. But for me, it's about the teacher. Because, you know, whatever, when I was taking classes in university, and for the young people here, this is my tip. If you know there's a good teacher, take that person's course. Whatever they're teaching, it will be interesting if the teacher is good. They'll be serious, they'll be interesting. And the same when it applies to UNRWA. Who are the teachers? Whatever's written in the textbooks. Textbooks may look clean, but if the teacher is supporting terrorism, then we're in trouble. Our reports for the past 9 years, every year we did one or two reports about who the teachers are. UNRWA is running hundreds of schools all across the Middle East for Palestinians. Our reports have shown how their teachers and their employees regularly call to murder Jews, they glorify terrorism, they encourage martyrdom, that's killing yourself for the jihad. They demonize Israelis, portraying Israelis as evil. They incite anti-Semitism. We are paying for these schools. Our tax money is paying for these schools. For example, when news of the massacre broke out, UNRWA staff immediately celebrated it. And you could see it on Facebook. We didn't do any special hacking, nothing that exciting. We went on Facebook, you type in UNRWA, you see the name of a teacher who puts in his profile or her profile, I teach at UNRWA. You see the pictures of them with the students. It's all clear. It's all there. If I can find it, then Guterres can find it and Volker Türk can find it. And the head of UNRWA, Philippe Lazzarini, very nicely spoken Swiss guy. He's the face, but UNRWA is 99% Palestinian. They put a few Europeans to do the fundraising. They take pictures here in Vienna and other places, but UNRWA is 99% Palestinian. What do the teachers on Facebook, what did they say after October 7th? I'm quoting. Here's from Gaza teacher Osama Ahmed. Allah is great. Allahu Akbar. Reality surpasses our wildest dreams. This is unbelievable for them. October 7th massacre. UNRWA school principal Imra Hassan justified the massacre as restoring rights and redressing grievances. Again, like Guterres said, grievances. UNRWA English teacher Asma Rafi Kuhel excitedly called, quote, to sculpture the date. Sculpture the date, mark it in stone, and added an emoji of a heart. So, UNRWA teachers systematically glorify terrorism, and some even took part in the massacre. Even the UN acknowledged that 9 UNRWA staff actually were involved in the massacre on October 7th. Now, I mentioned this recently to a country, the director of a foreign ministry. Don't want to say which one, but I'll tell you it was a large Norwegian-speaking country here in Europe. And he said to me, it's a few bad apples. It's just a few. It's a 0.00. He had the percentage. 0.002. It's a few bad apples. There's so many staff. Let's look at a few bad apples. Right? It's a few bad apples. About 2 years ago, we put out a report how a teacher in Lebanon, UNRWA, named Riyad Nimr, Mr. Riyad Nimr, posted on Facebook when there was a massacre in Jerusalem in 2014 in Har Nof in a synagogue. Terrorists came with axes and they were killing people wearing their tefillin while they were praying. They were slaughtering, killing and wounding people. And the teacher in Lebanon, he sees it. He shares the picture of the blood in the synagogue and he says, amazing, how wonderful this is. This is routine. And he posted it. We exposed it. America must have made a complaint and UNRWA had to do something. And so they suspended him. They didn't fire him. They didn't condemn him. They suspended him. Please stay at home for a month. This was an outrage for the UNRWA Teachers Union. They protested. They shut down the Nahr al-Bared refugee camp. They marched in marches. They brought the students. They put up, I don't know if they were real guns or fake guns. You have students holding guns. Thousands protested to rally behind the terrorist-promoting teacher. A few bad apples. Just a few bad apples. The others are promoting peace and human rights and universality and justice and democracy. I'll give you a second example. For many years, the head of the teachers union in Gaza, so he's the head of 8,000 teachers in Gaza, which was overseeing about 240,000 students in Gaza of UNRWA schools. His name is Su'eil al-Hindi. He's on the Hamas Politburo. I'll say that again. He's on the Hamas executive board. There's Yahya Sinwar, if you know the evil mastermind of the massacre. There's a photo. Go on my Twitter account. It's out there. Yahya Sinwar next to Su'eil al-Hindi, head of the UNRWA Gaza Teachers Union up until a few years ago. He had to retire. When UNRWA was given some of this information about a little over 10 years ago, UNRWA, they were pressured. They said, okay, same thing. They said, Mr. Suhail al-Hindi, school principal in Gaza, head of the teachers union, we're going to suspend you for a few months. I said, no, you're not. Hamas mobilized all 8,000 teachers. They shut down the whole school system in Gaza for 3 months, from September till December. I think it was 2012 or 2011. They shut down the school system, and the thousands marched, Suhail al-Hindi, he's a good guy. What are you doing? Why are you picking on our wonderful guy? So UNRWA said, okay, he's back. And he was back. And then 2017, it was published that he was elected to the Hamas Politburo. UNRWA spokesman said, we asked him, he said he was not elected. So Israel, why are you complaining? But he was. And then UNRWA, they didn't fire him. They didn't condemn him. They said, just resign. Okay, he got a party for 29 years of service, and we're paying for his pension. And in the past few years, he's been living in Turkey. He led the March of Return protests, which was the lead up to the massacre. Suhail al-Hindi, right? All 8,000 teachers rallied for him. Just a few bad apples. Finally, in UNRWA today in Lebanon, the head of the teachers union is Fathi al-Sharif. He has a Facebook page. You can see it. It's he calls himself Abu Amin. He's the father of Amin, so he's Abu Amin. And he has a Facebook page. And for the past 10 years, supporting Hamas, putting up pictures of terrorists, putting up pictures of Sheikh Hassan Youssef, the founder, one of the founders of Hamas. And he has pictures of him when he makes a bar mitzvah, maybe not a bar mitzvah, but a chasana. He makes a wedding for his children. He has in the front row, all the leaders of Hamas are there. According to a Lebanese news report, he's a senior Hamas official, and he went to Turkey recently to meet with Hamas. In the pictures, you have his arm around Ali Baraka. You know, a few days ago, the U.S. Justice Department announced criminal charges against 6 or 7 Hamas terrorist leaders, like Yahya Sinwar. One of them is Ali Baraka, leading Hamas terrorist in Lebanon, coordinating with the Iranian regime and Hezbollah the 7-front assault against Israel. Best friend in all the smachot of Mr. UNRWA teachers union leader. Similar case, almost identical, in February or March of this year, some pressure maybe from America or another embassy, UNRWA told him, it's embarrassing, you know, you're suspended. Just go home for a little bit. No. You don't suspend me. You dare to tell me that someone who's patriotic, I'm a patriot. Hamas mobilized thousands in Lebanon to march to Beirut. They shut down UNRWA for months. It's not widely reported. There was one article about this at the beginning, but from March until June 3rd, UNRWA facilities in Lebanon were shut down. All the supporters of UNRWA didn't say anything. They were shut down because who shut it down? It wasn't Fatah, right? If you know Palestinian politics, the Palestinian Authority is Fatah. That's the secular, let's say, not so secular, but let's say secular. And then there's the rejectionist groups who are against the Oslo Accords, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, PFLP-GC, they have their own coalition of rejectionist forces, the Alliance of Forces. They're the ones who called the strike, not the PLO, because he's a Hamas guy. So they called the strike for 3 months. UNRWA was shut down. Philippe Lazzarini had to fly in to Beirut, this is in the end of May this year, met the Lebanese prime minister and said, we have a problem because UNRWA is being shut down. And then he met the terrorists. Philippe Lazzarini had a closed door meeting. There's no photos. We're very good at finding photos. There are no photos. He met with the Alliance of Forces, which is Hamas, the Jihad, PFLP-GC, and the others. And according to all the news reports, they reached an understanding. And on Saturday, June 1st, they announced the strike is over. We reached an understanding with Mr. Lazzarini. And on Monday, June 3rd, the strike was over. What are the understandings? Well, we know he's not fired. So the head of the teachers union, UNRWA, won't fire him. He's a senior Hamas official today. Teachers union in charge of 39,000 students. So, ladies and gentlemen, a few bad apples? No. UNRWA is rotten to the core. So, what are we doing about it? You know, I've been urging countries to stop supporting UNRWA. The whole point of UNRWA, just so you understand, the whole point of UNRWA, it's not a humanitarian agency. Yes, they do give out boxes of food. Yes, they do give out medical services, but any UN agency can do that. UNHCR can do that. UNICEF, many UN agencies do that. The purpose of UNRWA is to tell Palestinians, you are going to dismantle Israel and you're going to go back. You have the right of return. Again, it sounds wonderful, the right of return. Palestinians who've been living in Jordan, who have Jordanian citizenship, they're not refugees, and they have no right to enter Israel, especially when their purpose is to kill Israelis. October 7th, if you ask the terrorists what they were doing, they'll tell you, we're exercising our right of return. And UNRWA, they say this, UNRWA is the witness to what was done to us in 1948, the injustice of Israel. This is the witness, and this guarantees our right of return. That's the whole raison d'être of UNRWA, is to dismantle Israel. Make no mistake about it. So I've been going to parliaments. I went to the European Parliament. I was in Congress four times. I was in the Swiss Parliament. I was in the Dutch Parliament. I was in The Hague a few months ago. I think it was June. I'll share with you that episode briefly. When I get invited, many members of Parliament go crazy. In the European Parliament, they told this MEP who tried to bring me, no, you cannot bring UN Watch and Hill & Knowyer. They're terrible. You cannot bring them. And they said, and they couldn't stop it. So they said, okay, but we insist that you remove all cameras from the room. So I spoke in the European Parliament. You will never see the video because the radical left-wing members insisted that it be called in camera, which means basically in secret, in the chamber, and no cameras. And then even as I spoke, they stood up and were shouting at me and accused me of being a criminal, and they walked out of the room. Okay. That was in the European Parliament. The Dutch Parliament, I spoke. And there I began speaking. Right away, someone tried to interrupt me, said I shouldn't be there. The chairman, not a supporter of our cause, but said, listen, we invited him, let him speak. I spoke, and then a socialist member of parliament from the Socialist Party named Sarah Dobe, she said, you know, you're making accusations on your website about UNRWA, and I myself have not found the facts. By the way, go on our website, and you can click about the case against UNRWA. You will see hundreds of pages of the most meticulous screenshots, right? We're putting screenshots of everything I told you with links to the page. All the facts are there. I have not seen much. She says, I myself have not seen the facts. Okay. If you don't want to see, I can't make you see. Then she says to me, why are you putting out there these accusations? Do you try to fact check? Do you try to contact UNRWA in advance before you put it out there to fact check with UNRWA? She asks me. And I said to her, I said, honorable member, I said, first of all, I'm not putting out there anything. When Fathi al-Sharif for 10 years is publishing Facebook posts, they're not private posts, they're open to the world, he's putting it out there. I'm sharing with you the links that he put out there. So I'm not putting anything out there. I'm just sharing with you what the UNRWA teachers and school principals themselves are doing. Second, I said, you're asking me why I'm not contacting UNRWA in advance. I said, I don't know if you're aware, but for the past 9 years, as we've been putting out reports, I have written letters and emails to the current head, Mr. Philippe Lazzarini, and his predecessor, Monsieur Krahenbuhl, Pierre Krahenbuhl, who's now the head of the International Red Cross in Geneva. I've been sending them emails. And I listed her, I had the chart, and it's on our website. In 2015, I wrote to them. In 2017, 2019, 2022, 2023, this past year. And I wrote to Mr. Lazzarini, and I said, can we meet? I will meet you in Geneva. I will meet you in Amman, where they have headquarters. I'll meet you in Jerusalem, where they have an office. I'll meet you in New York. I will meet with you anywhere. No response. All they do was actually to defame UN. UN Watch is against Palestinians. UN Watch is not acting in good faith. I said, you're asking me why I don't contact them. I have been reaching out to them time and time and time again, and they refuse to even answer us. And she had nothing to say. So that was in the Dutch Parliament. Now, you may have heard that in January, when it was revealed that a number of UNRWA people were involved in the massacre, many countries froze their funding, which was nice, and then they unfroze the funding. And they did so. They commissioned a report led by the former French foreign minister, Catherine Colonna, and it was supposed to be a kind of an audit into how UNRWA handles accusations of terrorism. I'm the group, UN Watch is the group, I'm the spokesman of the group that has been making the accusations for the past 9 years. There's another group called Impact SE. We are one of the main groups. There's maybe two or three groups that publishes these findings. She didn't even bother to contact us. Which was absurd. We sent them a 25-page report. They didn't even bother to respond or to mention it. This audit, this independent review determined that UNRWA is indispensable, irreplaceable, humanitarian, life-saving. Life-saving. And they said they have greater controls and processes than any other organization in the world. And when I spoke in the Netherlands, I said, you know, it may be true. It may be true that UNRWA has policies and processes and mechanisms for ensuring neutrality, which means not promoting terrorism. But, you know, Stalin in the 1930s, he had the most democratic constitution. That it was called the most democratic constitution. Well, you know what? It was a very nice constitution. If you read it, there were all kinds of freedoms in there. Even as Stalin was murdering hundreds of thousands of people in purges and fake trials, he had a lovely constitution. So I don't care what the mechanisms are. I just told you how UNRWA responds to terrorism in their midst. They couldn't care less. So Catherine Colonna wrote this report in April. She said UNRWA is kosher. It's glatt, it's mahadrin, mina mahadrin. And the country said, oh my God, this is amazing. And the next day, literally the next day, Germany, Japan reinstated their funding. They all unfroze. Austria said, I'll quote you, I looked it up for you especially tonight. They said that on May 18th, Austria unfroze the funds. And they said, did a careful analysis of the action plan, because UNRWA, after they got this super kosher hashkacha, UNRWA said, we're going to do an action plan to ensure everything is great. And Austria said, because of your action plan, the money is unfrozen. So most Western countries unfroze, but not the United States. The United States, actually, the committee that I went to speak four times last year, took the initiative, and Biden signed it into law, Democrats and Republicans. For the next year until March 2025, not a single penny will go to UNRWA from the United States. Last year, $400 million. This year, zero. So that is a very welcome development. Second, I'm happy to share the good news that on Monday, the Nationalrat, if I'm saying it right, the Conseil National in Geneva, in Bern, the lower house of parliament, of the Swiss parliament, adopted three motions. Number one, immediate suspension of all funding for UNRWA, passed by 99 to 88. Great news. Great news. And one of the members who voted for it was in the parliament here in Vienna, and I got to thank her in person. Three motions. Number one, immediate suspension of funding for UNRWA. Number two, we will give money to Palestinians in Gaza, but through other means, not through UNRWA. Number three, we call on the federal government of Switzerland to find a replacement for UNRWA, to end UNRWA. It's the first declaration of any parliament in the world that we need to replace UNRWA. And in the motions, they explain the motions and they mention the reports of UN Watch. So it wasn't pleasant for me on the last day of Pesach to fly into Bern and to spend part of Pesach there so I could meet and speak with the Swiss parliament behind closed doors. But at least I'm glad to see that the result is unprecedented declarations by the Swiss parliament against terrorism being supported by UNRWA. So, ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, what we're facing at the United Nations is a betrayal of the UN's founding values. This is a very dark time. We refuse to give up. I was recently in Israel, and I have to say that seeing young people, how energized they are in the most horrific time that Israel has ever faced. People are committed. People are determined to defend their homes and their families. And there is resilience. And we see around the world, on the one hand, the most horrific times we've ever faced. On the other hand, we see people coming together. We see people who were never engaged before or very hardly engaged suddenly woke up and rediscover their Jewish identity and their solidarity and their commitment. And I hope that all of you will help spread the truth. It matters wherever you are. If you want to do one thing tonight, I'll invite you just to sign up on our newsletter. If you do that, you'll receive updates on how you can take action. UNWatch.org. UNWatch.org. Sign up with your email once a week, once every 2 weeks. We send an email and you can find out how you can share the truth in your country, in your parliament, on social media. Sign up at unwatch.org. That's my one request. I assure you, from our end, we will never give up. Am Yisrael Chai. Thank you very much.
Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns. Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns.